and it's a cloudy Wednesday morning. I just call the meeting to order, and I'd like to ask Sherry to do a roll call for board members.
Wayne Brown.
Here.
Ms. Wilkins.
Here.
Ms. Cruz.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Parody.
Here.
Mr. Carl.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Barnhill, are you on the line?
Sherry, this is Devin Mitchell. Mike Barnhill asked that I sit in as the second delegate today for the Department of Revenue.
All right. We'll do a roll call here in the room.
John Springsteen, Ada.
I hope you're taking roll call in the Anchorage room.
Yes, we will do it here.
Bill Phelan with Ada.
Madonna Lindley with Accutag.
Linda Sen with Ada.
Liz Greer with Ada.
Leona Hakala, Ada.
Frank Campanen with Ada. That's everyone here.
I don't think we can hear them right this moment.
All right.
So she's taking roll call on her end.
Okay.
I'm muted it.
Well, would there be anybody online if they wanted to make some comments?
Yeah, I unmuted it.
If they dialed into this 800 number, we should be able to. I'm checking with her right now.
Okay.
I hope.
Item number four is agenda approval. John, you had a couple of additions you want to make under executive session.
Yes, Chair. The request for two additions for the executive session to add personnel matters and IEP.
Any objections to adding that to the agenda? Any objections to the agenda as presented? Were you going to let Senator Murkowski's chief of staff call in? I'll get 30 minutes. Motion for the agenda.
So moved.
Seconded.
Thank you. It's approved. So I'd like to invite Mayor Mattingly up to be so gracious to let us use his facilities here. And I think the last time I was in this building, I may have been in the doghouse back when it was a school. But
on detention.
So, Mayor Mattingly, from all of us today, we sure appreciate the hospitality you've given us here.
Thank you, Chairman Cruz. One Fairbanks with another, welcome to the old main school. I think Mr. Wilkin went here, Mr. Cruz in the back went here, my mom went here. So this building has a lot of history. This is where we have our city council meetings. So we're honored to have Ada here to conduct their important business. In my banking life prior to this, I dealt with Ada many times, and they've done some tremendous things for a lot of people over many, many years. So I wish you to have a really good, rich meeting of the minds, which I know you do, and I thank each and every one of you for your service. It's one thing, the public hears a lot about, what we do, but they don't really know some of the work that's involved when you volunteer for a board or you volunteer for this or get elected to something. It's a lot of work and a lot of time commitment. So what you do does not go unnoticed, especially by people in this city and other cities around the state. So thank you very much. And I can't stay too long because I'm in negotiations, which I spend a lot of my time when I'm not in this room. Have a good meeting today.
Mayor, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That brings us to item number five, on the agenda, public comments. I'll remind everybody, any public comment, the limit to 3 minutes. I'll need your name and affiliation if you have one. And I will start with anybody in the room. Anybody in the room with a public comment? Come on up.
Good morning. Patrice Lee, citizen and coordinator of Citizens for Clean Air. I am not here speaking on behalf of the Interior Gas Utility Board this morning in any way. I'd like to also welcome you to Fairbanks. It's a beautiful city, and as you look outside today, even though it's a little cloudy and rainy, one can just smell the fresh air and see the beauty of a community that I've lived in for 40 years plus, and many of you, of course, live there too. I would like to mention to you, though, that in the wintertime, on many, many days of the year, that scene outside changes dramatically. And we have, in the borough, the worst air quality in the nation by twice. It doesn't look like it does outside now. So I would invite you to consider having your next annual meeting in January or February here, because I think it's important to experience what people actually go through. Most people can't just get up and leave when the smoke is choking them out. They have to figure out how to deal with it. It could be expensive. They have to add fans, or if they can't afford to, put in an HVAC system in their home, or they just end up going, some people, to the hospital or to the library or places where there are clean rooms designated if you're having a bad problem. That's particularly difficult if you live in North Pole to drive in, because they only have one or two clean rooms there. I would urge you to keep that in mind, the visit here to Fairbanks in January or February, and also to remember that every decision the board makes affects people. And I understand that you do care about that and that you're working hard to try to solve it. But if there are any situations where the people can be helped sooner or quicker, that's going to mean that we have fewer premature deaths, fewer hospital admissions and ER admissions. We need help, and we appreciate your attention to that very. The sway that you may have with the legislature on our behalf. So thank you, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Patrice. Anybody else like to come up and give a comment? Morning.
Morning. I'm Falcon Gillespie. I'm with the Northern Alaska Environmental Center. And this morning, I'd like to first say thanks for being here in Fairbanks today. And I'd like to discuss the proposed road to Ambler project. Today, I'm not here to kind of address issues relating to potential impact of caribou habitat fragmentation or impacts to fish habitat or loss of resources, but rather talk sort of about the roles and responsibilities of the state. So the state of Alaska, and by extension, the board of ADA, have a duty to enact the will of the people of Alaska. And so I think I'd like to ask why ADA hasn't recognized the many tribal and community resolutions opposing the proposed road. And the communities that would be most impacted, such as Ambler, Alakakit, Settles, Native Village of Kotzebue, and many more, have expressed their opposition of this road. And I look forward to seeing ADA recognize this and recognize the will of the people of Alaska and stop pursuing the project. So thank you for the opportunity to speak to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any further folks in the audience here wishing to give public comment? All right, so now I'll close it in the conference room here, and I don't know if we're online or not. Well, I ask, is anybody online? Hearing none, we'll close the public comments. Next up on our agenda is our prior minutes for June 28th. I'll take a motion. Move to approve. Does anybody have any comments, corrections for the June 28th meeting? All right, they're adopted. Sure. Gary?
Chair, I noticed in the audience we have a council member that joined us today, and I thought he was going to say something during public comments, but David Pruse, to stand up, please, David. David happens to be our chair's younger brother, long-time Fairbanks.
I was hoping he wasn't going to say anything.
And just want to make sure that he's recognized that he's here. He hosts a talk show every day, so I know he's not at a loss for words. But, thanks, David, for being here and listening in for a while.
All right. Under new business, item 7A, loan resolution L18-05, Commerce Building, LLC, John.
Item 7A, resolution L18-05, regards the participation in a loan to Commerce Building, LLC, to fund the purchase of a Class A office building located at 100 Calais Drive in Anchorage. And its participation would be $3,420,000, which is 8% of the loan. At this time, I ask Chris Anderson to present.
Welcome, Chris.
Morning, thank you.
Glad you could make it.
It was an effort, but I got it. Well, as Mr. Springsteen noted, the borrower on this loan participation request is Commerce Building, LLC, and the guarantor on this loan is Steve Zelliner. It is the funding of the purchase of this commercial office building located in Anchorage. It's a 30,500-square-foot Class A office building located right off of A Street. Most who know Anchorage are familiar with it. It's just south of Walmart, off of A Street. There are no additional jobs supported. Mr. Zelliner is an experienced real estate investor and consultant. He owns and manages commercial properties throughout Alaska. This particular property is on leased ground with Calais. So we would take an assignment of the ground lease and leasehold deed of trust in a first lien position on the improvements. And Rick Richter, who is a commercial real estate appraiser, appraised this property as a sandwich lease because it is a ground lease and then the building is also leased to a tenant. And he appraised that on an as-is basis for $5,700,000. The loan-to-value ratio is 75%. It does debt service the loan at 1.33 to 1. We have no related debt with this person or this tenancy at this time. There's no environmental issues that are noticed on the property. In regards to the market, the appraiser indicates that the market for Class A office in Anchorage has been strong, been growing for the last 10 years. The vacancy rates have remained relatively low. Current rental rates for new Class A space is approximately $3.10 per square foot. The existing inventory of Class A is expected to remain stable in the near term. New construction of Class A in Anchorage is unlikely to occur in the near future, as those numbers, generally speaking, do not pencil. And the strength that we saw in this credit, there's very strong financial strength that is available from the guarantor, Mr. Zelliner. It is a creditworthy tenant, and it is 100% leased to that tenant. The remaining lease term is for 8 years. It does provide a stable and reliable cash flow. There are additionally two 5-year options at the termination of that lease. And the likelihood of them renewing is quite high. They have invested money in this property. Again, the debt service coverage, 1.33 to 1, which is above our minimum of 1.25. I listed as a weakness or a perceived weakness that it is on leased ground. We do finance on leased ground, but mitigating this concern is the fact that the remaining ground lease is 55 years with options. They have two 15-year options at that term. In regards to...
Chris?
Yes.
So I'm reading this as lease term for 8 years.
There's the ground lease, and
yeah,
there's
yeah.
the lease on the improvements.
On the improvements, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
In regards to the portfolio diversification, these are fiscal year-end numbers. Ada has 22.3% of the total statewide portfolio secured by office-type properties, and that would increase to 23.19% And for participated loans within the Anchorage region, we are at 33.7% attributed to office projects, and that would go up to 35%. The total dollars in the Anchorage region as a percentage of ADA total portfolio dollars would increase from 47.5% to 48%. And staff does recommend this loan for approval, and I would open it to any questions.
Questions from the board? Chris, could you tell me what's our total portfolio out now? What do we have for
it
total dollars out for loans?
It's approximately $429.7 million.
429?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so this is going to bring that 48%, the $429 million in Anchorage. Is that? Or is that just real estate?
That percentage that I mentioned, that's a percentage of our exposure of the portfolio. So in office, in Anchorage, we have the majority of our portfolio in Anchorage, and
right.
That does go up to 48%.
Sure.
This particular loan, I just ran a quick number, this particular loan as a function of the total portfolio is under 1%, it's like 0.8%.
Right. What's the interest rate on this? On ADA's part end, do you know the interest? It's variable on the north end.
Yeah, 4.08 is the 20-year rate. Mm-hmm.
4.08.
So you're doing accelerated AM.
Good interest rate.
It is. They love us.
Is that consistent, or do we? Has that changed in the last 6 months?
They go up and down, but it's not substantial. It goes up by, tenths of a percent. So.
But that's fixed, though.
The amount of business that's
to. Mr. Chairman, I'd move L18-05 for approval.
I second it. Thank you.
Ready? Devin Mitchell is on the line in Anchorage for Deputy Commissioner Barnhill.
All right.
All right. So, Ms. Brown.
Yes.
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
Mr. Carl?
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Parity?
Aye.
Mr. Cruz?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you.
If they have any questions in Anchorage, they're going to text them to me. If anybody in Anchorage has questions, they're going to text them to me, and then I can read it out loud.
So moving along, item number 7B is Eielson Air Force Base Regional Growth Plan with Fairbanks North Star Burville. John?
Item 7B is presentation of the Eielson Air Force Base Regional Growth Plan. ADA has been participating in growth plan meetings for the past several months, and with this board meeting in Fairbanks, wanted to provide the board an opportunity to hear firsthand on the overall planning effort. We're pleased to have with us here today Colonel Ben Bishop, Wing Commander of Eielson Air Force Base. Thank you for your service. And Jim Williams, Chief of Staff of the Fairbanks North Star Borough. If you could join us at the table, looking forward to it.
Welcome. Thank you. Again, I want to thank ADA and the community for inviting us to come down and be part of this conversation. It's really important to me as the new commander. Again, I'm Colonel Ben Bishop. I've been in command for just over a month. I came from Luke Air Force Base, where I flew the F-35 down there, and I'm on base here to look forward and really build the future of air power in the communities. That's part of that.
So I'm going to interrupt you for a quick second. Mm-hmm. How long ago were you Luke?
So I just came from Luke. So there from 2016 to just the end of June of this year.
Did you meet a second lieutenant by the name of Tupel?
I did not.
He went through the F-35 program.
Okay. Did you just graduate?
Well, now he's a Hill.
He's a Hill,
yeah. He's been there about 6-8 months.
Okay.
But about the time you were there, he just started the F-35.
So, yes, we graduated our first two F-35, we call them basic courses. Previously, everyone that flew the F-35 was someone like me who flew the F-15 previously, and now we're teaching people that came out of pilot training.
He was first class.
Yep. So he is really the future of that airplane, and I would also say this community is the future of that airplane as well.
My daughter has an interest in him, so yep. That's why I bring that up.
Well, in the airplane?
Yeah.
Excellent. My daughter does as well. And and there's an old adage, actually, a fighter pilot adage that goes, you know a conversation with a fighter pilot is half over when you hear the phrase, okay, enough about me, let me talk about my airplane. So I actually want to use that as a format for some of the discussion items I want to talk to. Instead of talking about me, actually I want to talk about Tyleton Air Force Base, the importance of it, and then also about the F-35 and how that mission will grow and how we are going to work in collaboration with the community to make that happen. So with that, we do have some slides, and we'll just kind of flip through them as talking points here. But with that, we'll go to the next one. Again, starting with my base, like, why is Eielson here? This is a picture of the globe as an airman sees the globe. So typically those down in the continental United States think Eielson is up in the north, kind of off in the corner of the map. But as we look at the globe, Eielson's actually in the middle, and Karen Banks is in the middle. So it's kind of hard to read those numbers, but Eielson is actually much closer to the key areas of the northern hemisphere than any place down in the continental United States. In fact, they're about one fighter sortie away from all those key locations. So the strategic importance of the Fairbanks community, Eielson Air Force Base, is not lost on the Air Force leadership. In fact, as the Arctic becomes more and more important in the strategic context, we're getting more and more attention as to the importance of investing in the mission and investing in that strategic power platform. I think it's interesting that my Secretary of the Air Force, or my Secretary, Secretary Heather Wilson, will be here on Friday. The Secretary of the Army is here this week as well. And then the Secretary of the Navy is also visiting Alaska, not up here in Fairbanks. General O'Shaughnessy, the Northern Command commander, is also visiting Alaska this month. So there's a lot of attention by senior leaders as to this picture here and why, as we look forward, the importance of it. So the bottom line is I don't foresee it going anywhere anytime soon just because of the importance that it plays in today's world and, more importantly, tomorrow's world. The other thing that Eielson brings is amazing airspace. So the people here obviously know the Alaskan landscape and the history of the aviation in Alaska, but the J Park complex or the training range that we use is second to none in terms of the capability to train and develop. So that second lieutenant that graduated from the F-35 basic course, that's those kind of people that are going to come up here, fly the F-35, fly in that airspace that is unique, really, in the world, in order to develop those tactics, and that airplane is going to fully develop here. So I'm really excited to be part of that that mission, and then part of the way moving forward. So with that, the next slide is just really the F-35 itself. So I started flying the airplane back in 2013. I actually flew this airplane. It's one of the test missions. This picture is from January of this year, where the F-35 came up and did cold weather testing to make sure it can operate, and I'm happy to report that the airplane did well. We learned some lessons about what's required to operate in the cold weather environment, and we're going to school with this as well. As far as the plan, we are scheduled to get our first airplane in April of 2020. The F-35 program has been maturing rapidly, and the delivery schedules have been holding firm, which is pleasant to see. The plan is to have 54 F-35s here on the ramp, and they're going to be here for a long time, like I said in the previous slide. The lifespan is designed for 40 years. Could be longer. We all know we have B-52s that are well over half a century old flying, so this is a long-term investment for a long-term mission at Eielson Air Force Base. I will say, having flown the airplane, it is phenomenal. So I flew F-15Es, I fly the F-16, and then the F-35. And it is truly a monumental leap in capability and the tactical level. The other monumental leap in capability also brings the partners that are flying this airplane as well. So Luke Air Force Base, along with the lieutenants in the Air Force, we trained Australian pilots Korean pilots, Japanese pilots, and as we move forward, our Secretary of Defense, Mattis, is very keen on how to on building alliances and building coalitions. And one of the best ways to do that is in the air, and the F-35 program provides that. So, and they're all going to train here at Austin Air Force Base in Red Flaggers. In fact, we have a Red Flagger side kicking off tomorrow. They'll be welcoming the pilots from Australia, Canada, and Great Britain that are going to be flying here over the skies of Alaska and training. So as we look forward, they're going to be flying these airplanes as well. So it's a very exciting time to be part of it. Along with the F-35 airplanes comes a lot of people, so in a lot of construction. You can actually go to this next slide. Over $500 million is being invested in Austin Air Force Base in order to make that happen. In addition, we're getting 1,287 additional airmen. That's about a 50% increase in the size and the footprint of it. So to give us some historical perspective, when we had two combat squadrons here, an F-16 squadron and an A-10 squadron, we had 36 airplanes on the ramp that were fully funded. But as we look forward, when the F-35 fully beds down, we'll have 72 fully funded airplanes there. So it's not growing just in terms of mission with the airplane, but also significantly in size. So that is going to be a growth. As far as that growth, those military construction projects have significant economic impact, as we know, and it's not just the local area, but these are some of the contractors and where they're from, from the entire state of Alaska. So it is not just a local effort to grow, but truly a regional and state effort as well. We have 18 military construction projects that are funded, and we're also refurbishing over 20 facilities in order to make this happen. So, along with as we go to the next slide, along with the with that growth, it's not just an Eielson issue. One of my priorities is engaging with the local community, so we make this growth happen in a very sustainable manner. I've talked to people from other communities, for example, Cannon Air Force Base, that had a growth as well, and they didn't necessarily have the best communication, and they actually overbuilt. That's something I'm very conscious of, so I really want to have a good collaboration with the local community to make sure that we communicate who is coming to Eielson Air Force Base, get that information so that growth happens in a sustainable manner and it's productive. This is a picture from the Golden Days Parade. We came out with our airmen and our families and engaged with the local community. It was a wonderful time. So, again, I am thrilled to be here, months in the seat. I love living in Alaska. I love being part of the community. My wife, I have four small children that march in this parade as well. They're age 2, 4, 6, and 8. And I will say I got a lot of credibility with my 4-year-old by being in a parade. So I'm already seeing the benefits personally from this community partnership. But as I use that as an analogy to be part of this conversation as we grow with the F-35 and how best to do that. With that, I wanted to hand it over to Mr. Williams. I think the Regional Growth Plan is a brilliant way to keep that partnership going and have that that ongoing conversation. So with that, I'll be happy to answer questions now or perhaps after Mr. Williams.
Well, I'm sure I'll have questions. Do you want to answer the Colonel now or do you want to wait till?
Well, all I want to say is Colonel, welcome to Fairbanks, and the only thing cold in Fairbanks is the weather. It's the warmest command you'll ever have, sir.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Hey, Colonel.
Well, thank you, Colonel Bishop. Thanks for the good handoff. And Mr. Cruz, thanks for coming to Fairbanks to hold your ADA board meeting. We appreciate you coming up, and I hope we're treating you well. Mr. Springsteen, John, thank you for participating in our Tiger Team meetings. It's been very, very helpful having you on the phone and kind of providing that expertise that we need, that guidance. So I'll be brief because I know you have a full agenda this morning. But basically what I want to kind of highlight is the regional growth plan that's in response to what is changing in our community. The F-35 are coming. And with that and other changes that are happening in the community, we have discovered a few things. I guess this first slide right here kind of talks to about our community, our hometown, and kind of what our identity is. And we've been, you know, discussing that in the mayor's office and around town. We're a married group of people. We have families. We're industrious, and we're patriots. And that we are patriots identity characteristic links back to our rich history with the military and how that the military has integrated into our community over the last probably since prior to World War II. Next slide, please. So as Colonel Bishop said, there's a ton of construction projects going on in the in Alaska, and specifically here in the Fairbanks area at Eielson, and that has gained a lot of recognition. We've been headline on some magazines, as you can see. But the thing is, the thing to take away from that is this is going to provide a boost to our economy, not just in the interior. It's going to provide a boost to our economy statewide, and with that come some challenges. So obviously we're grateful for the economic impact that these projects and the new people and new mission is going to bring to our to Eielson. But the challenges just don't stop right there at the Eielson gate. The things are going to impact our community in town from Salta to North Pole all the way up into Fairbanks and probably even out into Fox and the other areas of the borough. So there's many opportunities with those challenges. Next slide. So back when, about the time the Air Force was about to make the record of decision to base the F-35s at Eielson, we were already in discussions with the Office of Economic Adjustment out of the Department of Defense. And what the Office of Economic Adjustment does is they help communities adjust the changes in their community as a result of changes to basing decisions. And a lot of times it could be negative because of, you know, BRAC issues, but we have an interesting challenge here. We're getting a pretty substantial increase to a mission at Eielson, and it will impact us. We identified a lot of things. So OEA has provided funding for an economic, for a regional growth plan, and I'll talk about that here in just a minute, where we're at with that plan. Once that plan is deployed, we'll go back to the Office of Economic Adjustment. We've already been in conversation with them to apply for additional funds to assist us with the actual implementation plan. We know that's where the heavy lifting is going to be as we roll this out. One thing I want to commend OEA on is that they haven't just been a funding agency; they've been a partner with us. The relationship that we built with OEA over the last 2 years has been absolutely outstanding. So we want to make sure you guys are aware of that. Just real quick, this is a snippet from the RFP we put out for the regional growth plan. We're selecting our vendor. And this, really, the bottom, this is a comment from Mayor Castle, and what we intend to do as a community is we really want to roll a red carpet out for our new airmen, our new families coming into Fairbanks. So quick highlights on the regional growth plan. Where are we at? We contracted with Agnew, Beck, and Arcadis. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that consulting firm. And we began working on this in June, the actual work on the plan in June of 2017. So it's been over a year. It's been robust. We've had dozens, if not hundreds, of interviews, public meetings, focus groups, and a comprehensive review of the existing plans that we have in the borough. The draft plan that you see the cover page on, that was released for a 30-day public comment period in late May, and we wrap that up at the end of July. So we're taking the comments right now that we've received on the plan. We're integrating the comments into the final plan, and we should have that final plan on the streets by the end of August. So even though that plan hasn't been finalized, we are already starting to work on some of the things that were identified in the plan, and that's why we're here talking to you today. One of the, opportunities or challenges that we identified with housing. So we're starting the process of developing a housing task force right now. Next slide. So in the growth plan, we identified about a dozen focus areas. And I think the takeaway or punchline on this slide for ADA is in those focus areas, there are likely areas where we think ADA could be partners in helping us resolve or find solutions to some of these issues that are looming. Housing is a big one. The big picture is access to capital, utilities and infrastructure. ADA has a lot of experience with utilities and infrastructure, not just planning, some operations, but basically helping communities get those problems resolved. Next slide. So this is just a snippet of the multi-page. I have the actual draft plan right here. I didn't bring a copy for everybody because it weighs about 5 pounds. But I did pull out some snippets that you may be interested in. I'll give them to Sherry so she can make copies and you guys can read it. Just real quick takeaways on the housing focus areas. We identified a couple of strategies that ADA may be potential leads or partners in. New sources of capital and helping the community fully maximize existing opportunities around housing. Like Colonel Bishop said, we identified in the planning work that we did that there's a housing, we're going to have a need, we have a need for housing in the borough, and so one of the barriers to getting housing developed quickly is access to capital, at competitive interest rates or reduced interest rates. Utilities and infrastructure, we think Aid and I have a role to play in that, although we didn't identify Aid as a potential leader, like I said before, just recently, Aid has done this before. They've been involved in utilities and infrastructure projects, so we think there might be a role for Aid to play. So takeaway, these are just recommendations. We'll need to meet at some point and form the teams up to discuss this and then deal with the potential paths forward. Last slide. So this is the last slide in the slide deck. So I think the takeaway from that is that's circling back on our identity, the identity of Fairbanks that I brought up at the beginning here. We've always been known as a community that appreciates the military. I use the word appreciates, not in a negative way, because we do appreciate the military. I mean, I'm a former military member myself, and I felt very appreciated when I came to Fairbanks back in 1989. I think we need to move our community, the mayor and I think we need to move our community to not just being appreciative of the military, we need to be collaborators with the military. We have a symbiotic relationship. We see that growing, and we see the relationship meeting the needs of the Department of Defense, State of Alaska, and right here in our hometown, Fairbanks, North Star Borough. So without rambling on too much more, the last thing I'll say is we look forward to collaborating on the implementation plan with ADA and other community statewide stakeholders, and obviously the leadership at Eielson Air Force Base State. And I have staff available for questions if you have them.
Thank you. Question.
Jerry? Two, please. Mr. Williams, thanks for being here. I wonder if we could keep that up. Could we go back to the slide that we can... right there. Both of those, but let's start with that one. You know, following on to what Mrs. Lee said, I think it would be appropriate to put ADA at Health and Social Services, because we are working to clean up the air, and that's obviously a health issue. And so I would respectfully suggest that ADA have an arrow there with Health.
Absolutely, we can do that. And this was just kind of off-the-cuff thinking, but I agree there could be other opportunities.
And what follows on to her comments really well. Then one more. What was John, do you remember, what was the vehicle we used when we financed the National Guard Armory in Eagle River some years ago?
Yeah, and then that's actually using the revolving fund to make the investment in developing the Coast Guard in partnership with the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, the Coast Guard facility, the readiness facility at J. Bear.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Do you remember how many million that was? It was a big...
I don't recall off of the...
It was just out of the revolving fund, and we're making our 5%+ off of it.
Yes, and then it was the military facility zone legislation that allowed us to make that investment. Yeah. And we were also working with the DMVA on military facility zone adjustments to be able to work in partnership at Allison.
So there's a model that we've done before that might help us, we can help out at Allison.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, just to add to that from Mr. Springsteen. So North Pole has applied for military facility zone designation to CMBA, so I'm not sure where that's going, but we're working on it.
Thank you.
There couldn't be a better time with the time use of money. The need's here, and we have the money, and it seems to me like there's a great partnership here to get something done, and now's the time to do it. No simple solutions, only intelligent choices. And we can make some intelligent choices here. Thank you. It's very well done.
So where is Alaska Housing Finance? on the residential side.
At least from my participation, the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation is present in each of these planning meetings. And I know that they're, but I think the focus here was the discussion with ADA, so they're not.
Yeah, I just want to know, on the residential side, are they taking a lead role on it? Or
just like we're presenting it to you right now, we'll be presenting a similar pitch to AHSC.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're just in the beginning stages of rolling this out.
And what does the residential model look like? As far as, are they individual facilities for the airmen and their families? Is it multi-tenant buildings? What's the plan?
So I'll defer to Jeff.
Or is there a plan? Or is there a multiple plan?
How many homes do they figure they need? You have that down, Jeff? How many do you think you need?
Thank you.
We need your name for the record.
Yes, thank you. My name is Jeff Staff. I'm staff to Mayor Castle and at the Fairbanks North Star Borough, and I've been the lead out of the mayor's office on this project. So the demand for housing is around 975, but we also have to take into consideration the existing supply and the supply that we expect to have based on current construction by the time the airmen start arriving in 2020. So we also have to take into consideration where that we expect the airmen to want to live, which is in the 99705 area around, you know, closer to the gate, where approximately 85% of the current ILS and personnel who live off base reside. So taking those things into consideration, I know it's a little clunky of an explanation, but it's all in the report. We expect the gap, based on the current pace of construction and current vacancy rate, to be around 183 homes in the 99705 zip code. There is sufficient stock to meet the demand outside of 99705, so borough-wide, because of the high vacancy rate currently over on this side of the borough in Fairbanks. So the kind of worst-case scenario is that airmen would have to live farther away from the gate than they would prefer at the current pace of construction. Now, what we're observing in North Pole right now is an accelerated pace of construction just this summer. There's been a lot of rezoning. There's been a lot of, if Mayor Ward was here, he would say North Pole has got this covered. Their building department's never been busier. They're subdividing a lot of land. There's really a rapid rate of construction in North Pole. There's a lot of recommendations in the growth management plan on how to meet the demand. I could go through those. In answer to your earlier question, Mr. Pruse, AHFC has been, as John said, really helpful participating in all of the meetings, especially as we focused on housing. They'll also be a member of the Housing Task Force, which has its first meeting in a couple of weeks. So they'll be engaged throughout the process.
So do you envision NADA being more on the light commercial side than the residential and the housing sections? Is you know, what I would call typically what we do in Anchorage?
There may be an opportunity for some mixed-use multifamily housing. One of the recommendations in the regional growth plan is to put together a pro forma on what a mixed-use multifamily housing unit might look like. My understanding is potentially that may be something ADA would be interested in, but I'm not sure, or maybe that's more AHFC.
Yeah, typically when it comes to multi-tenant, multi-use, AHFC is stepped up to the plate. Because of the residential component of it. Mm-hmm. So they have typically taken the lead.
So if North Pole seems, if Mayor Ward seems to think he's got it under control, then should we not be concerned?
About housing?
Yeah.
I think we need to be concerned. I think we need to, because the stakes are so high, I think we definitely need to keep our eyes on it. And, one of the recommendations is to just see what the market does, which sounds like a very passive strategy. But as Colonel Bishop said, we certainly don't want to overbuild. Some of the comments that we have received have been from, yes, sir.
That's my key point. So if North Pole thinks they have it under control, we don't want to go out and overbuild. All that'll do is depress the market. So is there any way that somebody, the military, could say, for instance, if you build X, we're going to see to it that you have first shot at least, I can't guarantee it, but if someone was to agree to tomorrow to build a subdivision with 183 homes in it in the 9905 area. Is there any way that that contractor knows that he's going to get some kind of rate of return, or at least have a fair shot at a rate of return?
Currently, no.
Well, I see that as a fallacy. That's what we should be working at. Then it's a no-brainer. Somebody will step up right to the plate and build them. And they'll build them the way the military wants them. And they'll do it quickly. And you'll have a beautiful subdivision with a lake in the middle of it.
Yeah, we heard that a lot during the housing task force meetings or housing strategy meetings. Those exact words are in the regional growth plan. We heard that from quite a few developers. And there's a recommendation for a partnership directly with the Air Force. We would like to see that too.
Well, we've got the colonel here. He could step out and just sign up today, and we'll get that gun for you, sir. You could be a leader. You'll get a star on this, baby.
On the infrastructure side, do our current regulations facilitate what you're trying to do out of North Pole?
Chair, we've had discussions. Typically where ADA has participated is when there's private infrastructure. So, for example, a subdivision is putting in a wastewater system. And we have, in the past, issued revenue bonds for that type of activity. And that's been the major tool in ADA's toolkit, is the ability to access the bond market on behalf of a private borrower. That's a common activity for ADA.
Remember, there are some private utility out there and developments in the North Pole area, private water systems and sewer systems already, small, but...
I know...
Around Brownsville or something like that.
Getting kind of northwest, there's a private water distribution system. I don't know about others. The city of North Pole is expanding outside of city limits for the first time.
Mr. Chairman, I believe you're talking about the water system that they're Brown Hill Quarry.
Yeah.
That water system. They have about, I believe they have 180 customers, and that's owned by Vern Steele, Steele family.
Good, Debbie.
Yeah. Very interesting information. So interesting to look at this, Mr. Chairman, if I might, but we see the population.
So I'm looking at these dates. The colonel mentioned 2020, which is, 18 months away. When the first assets going to show up? What time of the year? Like January or February? You going to bring them in and show them the good stuff right away?
Yes, absolutely. So the first airplane is scheduled to arrive in April of 2020. So there'll be two airplanes that show up in that time frame, and then there'll be a little bit of a gap, about a month, 1 or 2 month gap, and then they'll rapidly arrive starting in the early fall of 2020. And then we will be complete, and correct me 100%, I believe by December of 2022, we'll have all 54 aircraft delivered. Okay. Yeah, but the captain has a good point here that our first airmen start arriving next summer. Those would be the initial cadre to stand up the kind of the expertise and the planning, and then the rest of the airmen will ramp up. I think just to comment on the earlier conversation that happened, there's a lot of, I think, excellent questions as far as, what is the supply, what is the demand going to be, and obviously I can't, as the wing commander, I can't provide any guarantees as far as where people will live or where they'll choose to live. However, I would like to make sure I am as transparent as possible to let you know what those airmen, what those demographics are. And I think the Housing Task Force is a wonderful opportunity to have that ongoing conversation as the that develops. Because I want to provide as much certainty for any, any organizations looking to invest, just to provide some of that stability and very transparent communication specifications.
Right. I think, speaking for myself, maybe the rest of the board, I think we want to make sure ADA has the proper tools in place to be able to help develop what's needed, and that we're not locked in the box, so to speak. But we take a look at all the options and opportunities to make it make a positive thing happen for the community. So that we'll close that part of it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So I'm going to ask for like a 10-minute recess for restroom breaks and whatnot, and then we'll come back and go to item 7C. Gary was already getting up.
You ready, Fred?
Board meeting back into session. And that brings up item 7C, IEP update, July 2018 Board Report to the Legislature. John?
So, item 7C, update on the Interior Energy Project. This time I ask IEP team lead Jim Terrio to join us to present.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Terrio, IEP team lead.
As you know from your tour yesterday, the storage expansion here in Fairbanks, that project proceeds on time. And we'll remove the initial bottleneck that will allow the consolidated utility to actually source more LNG for the community, have a higher level of redundancy and emergency supply on hand, and get the... be able to allow the consolidated utility to start signing up more customers and hopefully roll forward economically. The other items that I'd just like to touch on today, and I did discuss this a bit yesterday at the IGU meeting, we did receive a notice from DNR, a public notice, after going out to for solicitation to see if there was interest in a competitive releasing of the North Slope pad. There were no expressions of interest, and so that allowed DNR then to put together a preliminary finding and decision to negotiate directly with ADA to release the existing pad under AS3805070, which ultimately will allow general commercial activities to take place on the North Slope pad. The process that is underway now at DNR results in an open opportunity for people to submit written comments to the close of business on August 29th of this month. After that, DNR will proceed to move forward with reissuance of the lease under the statutes that I made reference to. In the preliminary finding and decision document, it basically walks through and outlines the process, the requirement of a survey and appraisal of the underlying tundra as far as what the fair market value for the actual lease price for the land will be. And then it also makes reference to the potential for subleasing. And of course, DNR is aware that ADA has been in discussions with Prudhoe Bay Chemical for a possible sublease on that pad, which would allow a revenue stream going forward. However, the opportunity to apply for the sublease can't be done until the new lease is in place. And so we are marching through DNR's process to achieve that. One of the things that is identified, though, that I would like a little bit of input from the board members is that DNR is still suggesting that because the original lease, which was done with gravel that was sourced for the purpose of an LNG plant that was supposed to then feed the Interior Energy Project, because that infrastructure is not going forward, DNR is suggesting that ultimately you need to pay an upcharge on the gravel, which is a little over $500,000. ADA does not have access to IEP funds anymore. Those have all been
allocated to the consolidation project. And so it does open up an opportunity for us, or a challenge for us, to look for a way to work with DNR and try and preserve that charitable and public use aspect of the North Pole pad, and to potentially avoid that gravel upcharge. I've got some ideas on how that might be achieved. Certainly we have pledged, even if the pad stays in ADA's control, that income off of the operation, we would pledge that to flow through as best we can to IGU, or ultimately if ADA proposes to transfer the pad to IGU, the net revenue from the activity would be of benefit to IGU. Whether that's enough for DNR to still consider it to meet that public and charitable use to justify the lower gravel charge, we're not sure. But we intend to continue to work with DNR to see if that can be worked out. There's also a suggestion that there would be a $250,000, I think it's a surety bond or payment. Again, if there's a way that we can keep that public and charitable use, Gene might want to try and avoid that. Yes.
So, you know, a bond is typically put in place either for something to be performed and it gets to the finish line, or for risk security. I don't know how it would apply to DNR, to ADA, or to IGU, which is government to government, or government to a own corporation of the same government. All right. Can you give me the rationale why we want a bond?
And Mr. Chairman, I'm looking here. I don't remember if it's actually a bond, but it basically comes down to the issue of the pad now is proposed to be used for general commercial purposes. It's not necessarily a direct use to benefit ADA or something that ADA owns. It's not a direct benefit to supply a consolidated utility.
But you're subleasing the pad to a third party. The lease will be hopefully an ITU, in their portfolio, or ADA's. We pass along whatever the economic positive impact is. But the primary tenant is still a government agency.
And so we are working through those things with DNR and trying to, number one, preserve it as much value in the pad, to try and set us up to generate as much income as possible off the pad, ultimately the benefit of the project.
And if you follow the revenue stream off the pad, ultimately it goes to the benefit of the public.
And whether DNR will think that that's enough of a direct connection is the question.
Well, it does. I mean, whether it's through ADA and its dividend program, or whether it's through IGU and helping offset the cost of cost of doing business to the public and Fairbanks.
So we are in negotiations with DNR. We're looking to get as much flexibility. I don't want to portray in any way that DNR is, operating outside their statutes. They do have statutes that they have to honor.
When you say negotiating with DNR, is that you and who?
It has previously been Jim Hemseth and Elizabeth Greer. Jim, of course, is retired. Liz is now our point person. Jerry Jude does provide legal advice to Liz. That's who's been involved so far.
So may I suggest that since the downstream beneficiary or whatever of IGU, that they bring them into the process also, so that they're at the table?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, we've committed to keep ITU apprised. As soon as we got these documents finally from DNR, we did provide them to Dan Britton to share with his board. It was in their board packet. And one of the deals that we do have to deal, issues that we do have to deal with, is right now the pad is leased by ADA. ADA controls the lease. As far as reissuing the lease under a different section of statute, DNR is dealing with the current leaseholder, that is ADA. Certainly, IGU can be supportive and provide comments in that process.
But at the end of the day, IGU is going to be a beneficiary.
That's a secondary.
We're going to pass along whatever. So, from a perspective, I think you should keep them not only in the loop, but I think they should hear firsthand. If you sit down, have any sit downs with anybody, what DNR is saying, so that there's no miscommunication of what we're being told from a state agency.
That's good counsel to make sure that happens.
Bernie?
So, Gina, if I would, I think you ought to deal directly with the commissioner and bypass staff, not because staff doesn't do a good job, because they have no flexibility. Our constitution, the state constitution, gives the commissioner complete flexibility. He himself can do a best finding. And because ADA doesn't have a dog in his fight as far as any personal gain for ADA. There's no personal gain for IGU. We both sit here and do work at the pleasure of the governor and all for the best interest of the citizens of the state of Alaska. So I think I respectfully disagree with going through the staff now and try to get this done. I think we're past that. I think you should have a sit-down meeting with the commissioner, and he can sign it and take care of it and do a best interest finding with no help from anybody else. That's his prerogative, and I suggest that maybe you might do that, because this truly would be in the best interest of all the people of the state of Alaska.
And Mr. Chairman and Deputy Commissioner Parity actually participated on behalf of ADA in some conversations with the Commissioner of DNR and also Commissioner Navarro at Commerce. As DNR looked at the problem that we were confronted with, you know, the limitations on the existing pad and the desire to go to something that would support general commercial activity, at the commissioner's direction, his staff did put together a process and try and shorten the public comment periods and the departmental turnaround then to get the preliminary findings out. They have put together as best of a streamlined process that the statutes actually require. I think the commissioner would have required this be done before he enters in, but I did want Mr. Carlson to know that we've had direction or conversations that have involved Commissioner Mack, and in fact, Deputy Commissioner Parity has been involved in those to represent the ADA board.
Good.
Can you put your crystal ball up, pull it out? So can you just give us a sense of the path that has to happen in order to at the end, we find cash for IGU?
Well, first we need to get the lease under terms that allow general commercial activity. That's in process. The next thing then is to apply for the sub-approval of the sublease with Prudvig Chemical. And DNR is aware that we have Prudvig Chemical waiting at the wings. Although this process has taken longer than they had desired, they're still waiting for the right time. That will produce the proposed lease, the sublease at the beginning of the year was just shy of $20,000 per month from Prudvig Bay Chemical, so $240,000 a year. ADA's cost for the lease, I think, just for the lease on the Tundra, was about $70,000. And so you can see it's net cash positive. And so we were looking then to, after ADA covers its cost of, you know, of administering that, you know, flowing that revenue forward. Now that's positive cash off of just one third of the pad. As we went out to see if there was a desire for some other commercial enterprise to come in and just, you know, try to bid to take control of the pad, ADA was approached by some economic activity that was interested in the other two-thirds of the pad. So we know there is some interest out there. They are aware that Prudvig Bay Chemical, you know, has desires to use one-third of the pad. We believe then it's activity that would, a co-location would work for them. So there is potential out there for additional revenue to come forward, too. So, you know, we think that we've set things up to get the pad under the right statutes to allow economic activity that will, in fact, result in, you know, a good positive cash flow going forward.
So short term, $250,000, if the pieces fall in place. Long term opportunity, more than that with the other two-thirds of the path. Is that where it sits?
That's true. Although we know we've had extensive negotiations with Crew of Lake Chemical, we know and negotiated, in fact, to that proposed lease payment, what that revenue stream would be. That's not a sure thing. Of course, they still need to, you know, pull the trigger and make that happen. The rest of the stuff were expressions of interest, and so it's a bit more speculative.
One other question, Mr. Chairman. Is there a place for the board to bring in for the best, whatever you call it, best interest finding, or did they just know that that's what we want? Do we need to reemphasize that in some manner to the commissioner and or the governor?
We could certainly do a resolution.
Mr. Chairman, whether it's a resolution or tightly written letter that could be signed by myself or Mr. Springsteen on behalf of the enterprise, just stressing why we think latitude, you know, one particular way should be exercised for the benefit of the project, they could certainly do it either way.
Mr. Chairman, going to the commissioner, I think it'd be more powerful coming from our board chair.
Absolutely, I agree.
There's so much subjectivity to this that you're just trying to get someone to tilt our way. It's not based on dollars. It's based on sentiment, for want of a better word.
It's very difficult for someone who's working in DNR to change or have any latitude when they're looking at statute and looking at what they have to do. They have very little latitude. They have to kind of stay within the parameters of what's there. But the commissioner doesn't have to do that. He has lots of latitude. The Constitution gives it to him. And so I think we need to encourage him to use his latitude.
But maybe to straddle, Mr. Chairman, both your comments, in so doing, you need to give him the peg to hang his hat on as to why it's best interest.
But we need to put that in writing to him as bullets. Here's the several bullets why you should do this, Commissioner. It gives him the cover to do it.
What's the time frame we're speaking of, Gene?
Days, weeks, months? We're in a process now that, as I indicated, the end of this month, public comments on this proposed preliminary finding decision need to come in. Then there's a process for DNR to take any comments that come in, you know, wrap those into the proposed changes. I think then there's another 30-day period and a potential 20-day period for the commissioner to make a consideration. As everything plays out, we could be to a final decision on getting this leased under this new section of statute sometime in October, September, late September, October.
To want another $500,000 for the gravel is ludicrous. It was probably put in there 50 cents a yard, and they probably want the $3. And then BP wants 60 cents, they'll be 360, so that's insanity. And then to think that they want you to put up a bond, that's insanity too. It's government agency to government agency. That's insanity. To even think they would even, I see why they asked for it, because that's what the statute says. But we don't fit there. We need to express that to the commissioner so he understands that we're doing what's the best for the state altogether. He's part of the state.
A step further, would it be appropriate for IGU to write a letter that would mirror and support our letter? It's hard to file.
Certainly, in the process that we're in right now, where written comments are being solicited, you know, a letter from IGU that is sort of marches lockstep, although they might have a little bit different perspective, you know, now is the time for that to potentially be submitted.
Mrs. Lee is nodding her head. I think something's going to happen.
And Mr. Chairman, as far as the argument that we may make to support latitude, it may be stronger if ADA were to retain control of the pad and flow the revenue through versus, you know, an ultimate request that the entire enterprise be transferred to IGU. So there are a couple of different decision points in the future.
Let's get the pad where we can commercially utilize the revenue, where we pass it through to IGU and ultimately, that may be another date, we ultimately can have to pack the first thing first. The goal is to get the revenue flow through the IGU. I'd be happy to pen a letter to Commissioner Mack if you think it's appropriate.
And other than that, just a couple of other items. I know that IGU and West at the Consolidated Utility continues to work with the ADA accounting folks to work everything out as far as the accounting of the enterprise, sort of wrapping up the closure of the deal. We did need specific proof of authorization for Mr. Britton to be making economic decisions as far as the draws on the FEX loan. That was taken care of so we could make sure that we were doing a quick turnaround on their request for draw to make the payments on the storage project as it moved forward. And so a little bit of concern there from time to time, but we've worked things out to make sure that everything can move forward.
For Brenda's sake, please make sure the paperwork's there. And the documentation that, you know, on the draws, percentage complete, et cetera, et cetera.
And with that, other than answering any other questions, that's it.
Mr. Chairman.
Yep. I had a couple, Gene. I'm on page 3 of your quarterly report to the legislature, and the comments on gas supply, which is very solid. I appreciate it. It allows the consolidated utility, IGU, to secure alternative sources of gas supply as early as 2021. It gives us, it avoided a 4% price increase. It gave us a great deal of volume flexibility and doesn't have any price escalation. So those are substantive accomplishments with regards to gas supply. My question is, and maybe it's mundane, but it's what's the anticipated in-service date of the new tank? When are we going to put gas in it?
The new tank should be completed, I believe, around this time next year. Then it goes through a cool-down period and testing, or first testing, and then they start to actually put LNG in it to cool it down slowly. And then they'll be able to start to fill it as we go into the fall and into the winter. So there is the potential with some of our currently interruptible customers that as the tank is topped off as quickly as it can be filled, that they won't be interruptible going into that first winter. However, the real strong effort to convert your residential customers and get people to hook up to the pipe that's in the street right now will be in the spring summer of 2020.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you. That leads into my second question, which was on conversion progress and maybe conversion roadmap. Or is that now in the hands of IGU?
That is largely in the hands of IGU. Of course, over the past couple of years, ADA has borne most of the expense of getting the PACE mechanism in place, getting the on-bill mechanism in place, which was signed into law about a week and a half ago, identifying potential funding sources that the utility and the local government may be able to bring to the party. So I believe there are some positive things now in place that we'll be able to help with that, the conversion. And quite often, that the dynamics of that potential are some of the positives that are never picked up in those people that are concerned about the economics of the project.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Chairman,
so
Gene, do we know, FNG had the conversion coordinator posted publicly for a job with the PCN, and do we know where that is in the process? And maybe Ms. Lee might help us out. Where is that right now?
I believe the job that has been posted, but not filled, but Ms. Lee may know more than I do.
The posting is closed, I believe. But
that is a position that ADA was very interested in. ADA was interested in that, even if, you know, ultimately the ADA would have kept control of the utility with the position that was identified that was needed, IGU agreed. And so we started that process actually before the actual close and consolidation. So they are moving forward with that position.
Good.
So Jim, I have a couple questions. So has there been any movement on for the city of Fairbanks and the city of North Pole to do some regulatory fixes or changes to requiring new furnaces to be dual fired, fuel feed, or removal and replacing an existing furnace to a new one that has to be able to burn natural gas should become available.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not aware of anything being introduced that would change their process that would make that requirement. I do know that the city of Fairbanks is aware that, you know, that they've got a role to play there, and certainly the city of North Pole. Out in the borough, the regulations are, you know, a little bit more lax. But we've got the core of the pipe in the ground within the city of North Pole, within city limits, and, of course, within the city of Fairbanks. So I think as the conversion working group, working with its conversion coordinator at the consolidated utility, really gets up and running and looking at that year 2020, you know, real full court press.
I think to be a day late, if, you know, there was comments earlier with the Eielson F-35 program about how they're building quite a bit. The city of North Pole is never been busier, and I'm wondering why there isn't they don't have a regulation in place today that says we're going to give you a permit, which you need for to put a boiler in, but your boiler has to be able to be able to convert it, has to be a dual fired boiler. I mean, it's mind-boggling to me that this today is such an important thing for air quality and to get people to convert that they don't, because in my mind, it's if you don't do that, now it's a $5,000 or $8,000 or $10,000 conversion, whether you can get them to do that or not down the road.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just add to that, we just had the discussion about housing in the context of the regional growth plan and the need to fill that gap, or we would want to fill that gap with convertible.
Absolutely. Or replacement. And then the other thing is there been any movement on the commercial side for public buildings to, once gas is available, that these communities immediately put them on natural gas? Or do they still get to flip back and forth? I mean they've got to help themselves. And it may take a little bit of some tough decision making, but if you're going to burn the clean energy is available and the community is truly behind the concept of cleaning up their air, it starts at the top.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, a couple of things. Which regard should the folks that are interruptible now, the thought that pops in my mind is the school district. Most of the schools that use natural gas do maintain a fuel oil capability. Certainly, I would expect the utility to work with the borough government and the school district under them. That once the quantity is available for them to continue to use natural gas, encourage them not to switch to fuel oil if they can save a couple pennies.
Well, you're making an economic decision on the utility up here based on volume. And if you've got to, it's the people's got to commit to taking. And I would think would start with government buildings that if you have it, we'll take it. That gives IGU and Dan Britton the scale and be able to do the economic modeling that they know for sure that these buildings are going to be taking this volume, and then they can set the rates for the community. And everybody helps everybody. And I'm just surprised that isn't going on as we speak.
Well, now that the utilities have been combined, the utility will actually be able to crunch numbers and let the borough government know if the schools that are hooked up all continue to use gas, what that volume does as far as dropping the price. And we will be able to supply that information to them so that they can make those decisions. So you've got school buildings, you've got the borough building, you
know, state building included. I mean,
a library.
But the state needs to be involved also with this.
Certainly.
It's a volume-driven price.
That's right.
And anyway, I would like you to follow up with the IGU counterparts to say, hey, we whatever we can do to help to push this issue, to help with conversions, the regulations, you know, dual-fired furnaces for new construction or retrofits existing today, and the communities that can have the regulatory ability to do that, and then all the public buildings and their volumes to be able to, whatever aid it can do to help to facilitate that, or pressure wherever we can, we want to
from my perspective, we want to engage.
And with regards to the conversion specialist, I know that Mr. Britton intends that person to be able to work directly with a commercial property. That's to date, you know, if they came forward, we had to tell them that we didn't have the capacity to serve them. Now with the tank, we are going to have the capacity to serve them and give them information on what they can do to start preparing themselves to use the fuel as soon as possible.
Well, there's a big decision going to have to be made by IGU in the near term about what to do with Pentex in the processing facility at Point McKenzie, whether to expand it, whether to add another train, whether to do a third party, whatever. It's hard unless you have some commitments. You know, if you don't have for sure commitments, the government's an easy commitment in my mind. Then they can make a sound business decision on where to put the resources that are few and far between, where to engage, and as far as I'm concerned, where to spend that hard money.
Certainly, and I know that the expansion of the Titan plant, which the House Bill 105 plan was built around, is the plan going forward. We have committed to consider alternatives. There was a discussion at the IGU board meeting yesterday that a number of the board members have gotten to the point where they've made a request that if Siemens actually has a proposal or if there's any other alternative, it needs to come forward. And there was some discussion about potentially a Siemens proposal actually being available at the next IGU board meeting. So we will be able to see if there's something there with hard numbers that would facilitate a comparison.
Well, it makes it a lot easier decision if you know what your volume's going to be. You have commitments. Again, it's whether it's the 105 plan or a second plan or a third plan, or if you have commitments from all the government buildings in this community to turn the gas on and you know what that's going to take, it takes a lot of the risk out of making the decision where you can get your supply from and negotiating your supply contracts after this one is up.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to spin the prism one more direction and go back to conversion. It's my understanding that with the climb in oil prices out of the bottom, that the delivered price of here in Fairbanks has gone north of $3. Anybody know what the current local pricing is and how that matches up against our delivered price?
Sure, and Mr. Chairman. In fact, I checked with Wes at FNG yesterday. They pull the distributors on every 2 weeks. They're actually out with the survey again today, so this information is 2 weeks old. Our current delivered price to a residential consumer is $20.81. That's equivalent to $2.75 fuel oil. The last time the fuel oil distributors were surveyed, the delivered price was $3.11. So we are currently under by a little bit and have been
10%,
over 10%.
And then, Gene, we need to complete that sentence and talk about the efficiencies where you can add easily a 10% to a gas furnace. So if we're 10 under now, you add another 10, we're really, when you write a check, we're 20% under oil today. Is that safe to say that?
That's right. If you install or have available a gas-fired appliance, the efficiency of those appliances are 90 to 95%. So you're capturing, putting to good use more of the GPUs that are generated. And again, that is a nuance that is quite often lost when there's just general public discussion. Certainly we know about that, FNG personnel know about that, and now having the person come on that will be able to communicate that directly to customers.
And then you have to add the environmental dollars. What is it worth to have clean air? And then you have to add, what is it worth? You do almost no maintenance on a gas appliance compared to anything else. If you have a diesel-fired furnace, I promise you, you're working on it every year. You won't work on your gas furnace every year, And you'll never work on your gas hot water heater ever. They're foolproof. So I'm just saying that I see no additions for that. And we're talking that all adds up in a person's life. And you can't, I don't know how you can put a price on the environment. And if we're going to clean up the environment, the only hope we have is to have everybody on gas. That's the quickest way to clean up our problem is gas. Been working on it for what, 60 years, you said, Gary? Yeah. So your first 51 years.
Okay, any more questions for Gene? Thank you, Gene. Now, item number 7D is executive session, and I will entertain a motion to go to executive session for personnel matters, IEP, and Mach 1.
Mr. Chairman, I so move.
Second. Okay, we'll be in executive session. Sherry,
staying in this room, and everybody else will leave except who you invite in.
All right. Let's do IEP first, Mach 1 second, and first.